Side 6, Champions of the Force, the Jedi Academy Trilogy, Volume 3, by Kevin J. Anderson. Continuing on page 262. Lando sneezed as he tugged on the huge padded suit.
"This whole thing smells like Wookiee hair," he said. "Did Chewbacca exercise in this thing and put it away wet?"
The sleeves were enormous, and his feet swam in the Wookiee-sized boots. He tugged the bulky fabric around his waist, fold upon fold, and then used the adjustment straps to cinch it tighter around him. He felt as if he were walking inside a giant inflated mattress.
"We've got a job to do, Calrissian," Mara said. "Quit complaining, or I'll do it myself."
"No," Lando said. "I want to help you, really."
"Here." Mara held out a case of the timed detonators. "Carry these."
Lando looked down at them and swallowed.
"Thanks."
Han gave a hollow grunt of pain as he bumped his head on something down in the repair crawl space. Lando heard his friend mutter something about wishing for a decent droid to do the dirty work.
"A couple of the components are fried," Han called up to them. His voice sounded tinny through the compartment. "But I've got spares, or at least close enough that I can get the ship running again. We've got 3 fused circuits. 1 we can get by without. 2 I can bypass."
"We'll give you half an hour," Mara said, pulling the helmet on and sealing it over her neck.
Han repositioned himself in the coffin-sized maintenance bay to stick his head up above the deck plates. Grease and leaked coolant stained his cheeks.
"I'll be ready."
"You better be if we trigger those timers," Lando said, and secured his own helmet. It seemed as large as a shuttlecraft on his head.
"Come on, Calrissian," Mara said. "We've got some wrecking to do."
From his comfortable chair, Tal Sivran squinted out at the panorama of the Maw's center, assessing the situation but making no decisions, like a good manager.
"It's the Star Destroyer Gorgon, sir," the stormtrooper captain said. "Shall I hail it?"
Sivran scowled.
"About time Admiral Dalla came back to do her duty," he said. It still rankled him that she had abandoned her primary mission of protecting the Maw scientists. Now that the rebels had already taken over the installation, it was too late for her to make amends.
"Why did she come back with only 1 Star Destroyer?" Sivran said. "She had 4. No, wait. 1 was destroyed, wasn't it? Well, 3 anyway. Does she simply want to flaunt her weaponry?"
He sniffed.
"Well, this time we've got our own Death Star, and we're not afraid to use it."
"Excuse me, Director," the captain said, "but the Gorgon appears to be severely damaged. The rebel forces are attacking her. I believe it's our duty to come to her aid."
Tal Sivran looked at the captain incredulously. "You want us to rescue Admiral Dalla after she deserted us? You have an odd sense of obligation, Captain."
"But," the stormtrooper said, "aren't we all fighting the same battle?"
Sivran frowned. "In a sense, perhaps, but we must have different priorities, as Dalla herself evidenced by leaving us behind."
He saw the rebel ships opening fire on the lone Star Destroyer, saw the attack increasing as starfighters met TIE fighters in a flurry of pinpoint laser strikes. The colorful battle had a hypnotic effect, and he thought of the blazing heat storms on the Twi'lek homeworld of Ryloth. He felt a lump of comet ice form in his stomachs. His career had been long and successful, but he was about to end it by destroying the facility he had so successfully administered for years and years. In the pilot chair of the Death Star prototype, Sivran said in a cold voice,
"All right, let us show Admiral Dalla we scientists can hold our own."
Suddenly, an alarm ratcheted through the chamber. Sivran sighed.
"Now what?"
Yem and Doxson both flipped through their manuals, searching for an explanation.
"We've detected intruders," the stormtrooper captain answered. "On the power core itself. It seems we picked up one of those smuggler's ships near Kessel."
"Well, what do they think they're doing?" Sivran asked.
"According to our sensor cameras, 2 people have emerged from their ship and, as far as we can tell, are attempting some sort of sabotage."
Sivran sat up in alarm.
"Well, stop them."
He snatched the manual out of Doxson's hands and flipped through the pages.
"Use emergency procedure number..."
He continued to skim over the pages, squinting down at the bulleted lists, flipped a few more pages before tossing the book aside in disgust.
"Well, just use the correct procedure, Captain. Do something."
"We have only a few men and not much time," the captain said. "I'll order 2 space troopers to suit up and take care of the intruders personally."
"Yes, yes," Sivran said, waving his clawed hand. "Don't bother me with details. Just get the job done." Lando tilted the face shield of his enormous helmet back and forth, the better to see with, but the Wookiee-sized suit folded around him in strange and uncomfortable ways. He had to work twice as hard just to figure out where he was going. His magnetic boots clomped on the metal plating of the gigantic cylindrical power core. Tapered at one end like a spindle with a diamond-hard point, the core pressed against another contact point that rose from the south pole of the Death Star. Between the two points, Starfire crackled as the charge built up. The skeleton of girders and access tubes, walled off compartments, temporary quarters, and storerooms, formed a giant cage around them. Linked catwalks spanned open spaces like a tangled net. Though the prototype was the size of a small moon, it held very little gravity. Lando had to work hard to keep his balance, letting his magnetic boots determine the direction down.
"We have to go closer to the energy pods," Mara said, her voice buzzing through the tiny earphone.
Lando looked for a way to respond and finally figured out how to activate his own helmet microphone. "Whatever you say, the sooner I get rid of these detonators, the happier I'll be." He sighed partly to himself, but also for Mara's benefit. "You'd think destroying one Death Star in a man's lifetime would be enough."
"I prefer men who never settle for enough," Mara answered.
Lando blinked, not sure how to take her comment. He allowed himself a broad grin. Holding out his gloved hand to steady Mara, Lando worked his way down the immense cylindrical core. He tilted his visor to shield himself from the glare pouring from the discharge at the contact points. Above them, the pronged disc of the Falcon clung to a thick girder.
"Should be good enough here," Mara said, reaching out. "Give me the first detonator."
Lando rummaged in the shielded container and withdrew one of the thick discs. Mara cradled it in her padded glove and bent down to fasten it to the metal hull.
"We'll work our way around and place them on the perimeter," she said, pushing her thumb down on the synchronization button.
The detonator lit up with seven lights blinking slowly, like a heartbeat, waiting for final activation.
"When they're all in place," Mara's voice said, "we'll give ourselves 20 standard minutes. That should be ample time to get back to the Falcon and get away."
Without waiting for him to agree, Mara worked her way around the curving reactor core and turned to take a second detonator from him, planting it squarely against the plating. Lando felt the faint vibrations of the core throbbing against his magnetic boots. The stored power seemed to be restless, building, waiting to be unleashed. It seemed to take forever to traverse the circumference of the vast power core, planting the seven detonators. When they returned to their starting point, Mara leaned closer so Lando could see her face through the curved faceplate.
"Ready, Calrissian?"
"Sure thing," Lando answered. She punched the activator button on the first device. All around the perimeter, the detonators winked blue as they began their countdown.
"Back to the Falcon. Hurry," Mara said.
Lando clomped after her. A movement caught his eye from the side of the bucket-sized helmet, and he turned his head just in time to see the blocky, armored suit of an Imperial space trooper. The enemy looked like a man-shaped AT-AT walker with reinforced joints on elbows and knees, heavy boots, and vibroblades like claws in his gloves. One slash and the space trooper could rip open Lando's suit, killing him with explosive decompression. The space trooper emerged from an access hatch in the framework above. He let the low gravity cushion his fall as his bulk dropped onto the power core. His heavy boots clanged on the metal as he landed next to Lando and Mara. "Where did he come from?" Lando said, ducking as the space trooper lunged with the vibroblades in his gloves. Lando bent backward like a mucus tree in a gale. His magnetic boots held his feet in place, but he threw himself in the opposite direction. Vibroblades slashed past his chest. Mara reacted more swiftly, swinging the empty padded container that had held the detonators, putting all her momentum behind it. The sharp-edged metal banged against the space trooper's thick helmet. The trooper reached up, stabbing through the plated case with vibroblade claws. Mara used his temporary disorientation to grab Lando and add his mass to her own as she shoved the space trooper. With her foot, Mara pried free one of the space trooper's boots as he fought to regain his balance. She slammed against him, breaking the magnetic grip of his other boot. In an instant, the trooper snapped free. Suddenly, unattached to the core, he dropped with the momentum imparted by the force of Mara's attack. The space trooper scrabbled to find purchase against the smooth cylindrical hull as he slid down toward the fiery contact points. The vibroblades in his glove made long, silvery score marks on the metal, but did no good. Sucked inexorably down, the trooper plunged into the flaming discharge between the contact points and vaporized in a bolt of green and blue static. The detonators continued their countdown. Lando signaled, "We're on our way, Han, old buddy. Make sure you're ready to go." When he felt a vibration through his boots, Lando looked up to see another space trooper drop down from the catwalks. This one carried a blaster rifle, but Lando guessed that the trooper dared not use it in the vicinity of the power core. The second trooper brought his blaster rifle to bear, motioning for them to surrender. But no voice came over their helmet radios. Lando wondered if the trooper had tuned to a different frequency, or if he merely expected the blaster rifle to be a universal language.
"Can he hear us?" Lando said.
"Who knows? Distract him. Our time is running out."
Lando waved his gloved hands and pointed down the expanse of metal to the blinking detonators. He flapped his palms frantically and threw his arms wide to mime an explosion. As the space trooper glanced in the other direction, Mara launched herself forward and grabbed the barrel of his blaster rifle, using it like a lever. In free fall, her own momentum knocked him free, sending the trooper tumbling back up toward the catwalks.
"Let's go. Don't worry about him," Mara said, returning to Lando's side. "Get to the Falcon before those detonators blow."
Mara and Lando toiled back to the ship, still clinging to the support girders. Behind them, the second space trooper managed to reach out and grab one of the tangled coolant pipes, stopping his reckless tumble. He descended toward the power core again, ignoring Lando and Mara as he hurried to the detonators. Lando felt Chewbacca's enormous baggy suit folding around him, making it difficult to walk. He looked back and saw the space trooper working with the detonators, but he knew Mara had cyberlocked them together. With only a few minutes left, the space trooper would be able to do nothing. Less than a minute before the time to detonation, Lando and Mara sealed themselves inside the Falcon just as Han disengaged the landing claw. "Glad you could join me," Han said, immediately punching the accelerators. The Falcon raced back out along the Death Star's equator. Its sublight engines flared white-hot behind it. The surviving space trooper managed to reach the ring of detonators. He worked meticulously but rapidly, disconnecting each one, using the built-in laser welder in his suit to remove the explosives. He tossed each one, still blinking, into the open space. He succeeded in disarming 6 of the 7 detonators. He was standing right above the last one, prying it up, when it exploded beneath him. Outside, in the midst of the space battle, Admiral Dalla gritted her teeth. Her face wore a perpetual look of disdain as she stared at the dizzying firefight. The attack was not going well. Her forces were being gradually worn away. She hadn't had many TIE fighters to start with. Most of them had been left behind in the Cauldron Nebula when she had wheeled the Gorgon about to escape the exploding stars. She had only her reserves, and most of those squadrons had been wiped out by Rebel starfighters. When the Death Star prototype reappeared above the gases overhead, Dalla felt a thrill of awe. She rejoiced at the enormous destructive potential suddenly available to her. The tide of the battle had turned. Now they could wipe out the Rebel infestation. But when she determined that the prototype was piloted by the incompetent fool Tal Sivran, her hopes dwindled.
"Why doesn't he fire?" she said. "One blast, and he could take out all 3 corvettes and a frigate. Why doesn't he fire?"
Admiral Crotus stood by her side. "I can't say, Admiral." She glared to make it clear she hadn't expected an answer.
"Tal Sivran has never had any initiative in his entire life," she said. "I should have known I couldn't expect him to do his duty now. Redouble our efforts against the installation. Let us show Tal Sivran how it must be done."
She narrowed her brilliant eyes to look around the bridge.
"Enough practice," she said. "It's time to destroy Maw installation once and for all. Open fire."
37. In the Maw installation operations room, one of the technicians pounded her fist on a control deck.
"Shields are failing, General Antilles," she announced.
Another engineer ran in from the outside corridor, florid-faced and puffing. Sweat plastered his hair to his forehead, and his blue eyes were glassy with panic.
"All this pounding has knocked out the temporary cooling systems we installed on the reactor asteroid. It was never meant to withstand such punishment. The reactor is going to explode. No chance of patching it this time."
Wedge gritted his teeth and looked to Quai. He squeezed her hand.
"Looks like we're about to save Dalla the trouble," he said. "Time to evacuate."
Beside him, Luke whirled around.
"Hey, where's Kip?"
But the young man was gone.
"I don't know," Wedge answered, "but we don't have time to look for him now."
Kip Duran's heart hammered, but he used a Jedi calming routine, forcing himself to relax. He required his bodily systems to operate efficiently, providing strength where he needed it, allowing neither fear nor exhaustion to hinder him. The tumult of alarms and the external attack rattled the installation. New Republic soldiers ran across corridors, grabbing equipment and rushing back to their transports. No one stopped to look at Kip. If anyone had bothered to question him, he would have used a simple Jedi trick to distract them, blur their memories, making them believe they had never seen him. Kip was pleased that Master Skywalker had not noticed his departure. With the sudden appearance of the Death Star prototype and the continued pounding from the Gorgon, Kip had known what he must do. He also knew Master Skywalker would try to stop him, and Kip had no time for that. He had used his own powers, light side powers, he fervently hoped, to distract everyone while he slipped out into the corridor. He had blanked his thoughts, his keyed-up emotions. Unless Master Skywalker made a directed effort to pinpoint him, Kip would go unnoticed in the chaos. As he ran, the tempo of the battle outside increased, and he knew that the installation would not last much longer. If the Death Star prototype managed even one shot, they would be annihilated in an instant. That was the primary threat at the moment. As he sprinted down the rocky tunnels to the maintenance bay where he had landed the Sun Crusher, he recalled when he and Han had fled through the spice mines of Kessel. The memory of Han brought a deep pang. The Death Star had reappeared in the center of the maw, but Kip had seen no sign of the Millennium Falcon. Did that mean Han was dead, destroyed in his sabotage attempt? Kip had been cursed with impulsiveness, making his decisions and acting on them without thinking of the consequences. Right now, though, that was a strength. He had to fight against the New Republic's mortal enemies, and he could not ponder and debate the ultimate results of his actions. Kip knew he had a great deal to atone for. He had listened to the dark teachings of Exar Kun. He had struck down his teacher and Jedi Master. He had wiped clean the memories of Kwai-Zooks. He had stolen the Sun Crusher and obliterated entire star systems. He had caused the death of his brother Zeth. Now he would do all he could to rescue his friends, not only to salve his conscience, but because they deserved to live and continue the fight for freedom in the galaxy. Kip stared at the oily metallic texture of the Sun Crusher's faceted sides. The quantum armor reflected light in strange directions, distorting it, making the superweapon appear to have been polished with slow light. With trembling hands, he gripped the rungs of the ladder and ascended. Han Solo and Chewbacca had climbed these same rungs to get into the Sun Crusher during their escape from the installation. Kip's brother had attempted to pull himself aboard before Corita's star exploded, but Zeth had not succeeded. Kip swung shut the hatch as if he were sealing himself off from the rest of the galaxy for all time. He didn't know if he would ever see the outside again, if he would ever return to Coruscant, or if he would ever speak to Han Solo or Master Skywalker again. He slumped into the pilot's seat and stilled those thoughts with a Jedi technique. Only a few hours earlier, he and Luke had been riding in the Sun Crusher, peaceful companions talking about their lives and their hopes. Now Kip could not think beyond working the simple controls of the Sun Crusher.